If you've been listening to True Crime South Africa for any period of time, you'll likely know that I do love a deep dive. When I listen to true crime podcasts myself, I often gravitate more toward the deep dive series where they focus on one case for multiple episodes. I've been doing work in the background for a long time to develop a deep dive series of my own, but the time to do it just hasn't found me yet among the book writing and publicity stuff and focusing on the cases the families of victims have requested I cover. I've also always been quite fascinated by financial crimes, scams and cons, in which the perpetrators seem to have no problem targeting those closest to them. There's something about these individuals that makes me wonder how far they're capable of going. So when I stumbled upon a post by Anthony Molyneux on Facebook the other day and saw what he was working on, I was immediately locked in. I've always followed the work Anthony has done, even long before I met him in person. The incredible work he did for Times Live when he worked for them as a journalist often formed part of the research I did for cases I covered on the podcast. And it was clear to me that we had two things in common, an obsession with crime and a love for storytelling. Anthony's first love in storytelling is visual. He's now an independent filmmaker. He produced the documentary series The Last Blue Ride about the murder of Hannah Cornelius, and his victim focus in that case really struck me. He also used that documentary to do really great things for the other victim of that case, Cheslin Marsh, who survived the ordeal but was understandably physically and psychologically scarred. More recently, Anthony produced another true crime docuseries called Beauty and the Bester, which was screened by Netflix and is equally brilliant. Not long after the release of that series, I got to meet Anthony in person when he very kindly agreed to interview me on my publisher's podcast about my most recent book, Bare Bones. We connected on the socials after that, and so it was that while scrolling Facebook, I came upon a post he'd made about a case he was following. Another thing I'm really big on is personal connections to cases, because there's nothing quite like someone who actually personally knows a perpetrator or victim talking about a case. Anthony's post was about his friend, Robert John Johnson, a young man he'd been friends with for most of his life, and who Anthony discovered has been hiding a dark side. As you'll hear in the episodes to follow, Robert John seemingly morphed from a happy-go-lucky, kind and loyal friend into someone who, in 2020, allegedly fled the country after fleecing his friends and family out of millions of rands. Clearly, the journalist in Anthony needed to know more, and so he started digging. The post that I came across contained an audio recording he'd made of him telling the story of his ongoing investigation into his childhood friend. And now, it's a full-on podcast, and I'm going to be sharing it here with you, True Crime South Africa listeners. Because it's ongoing, you'll see episodes pop up in the TCSA feed every now and then. But if you want to find these episodes all in one place, I highly recommend you search 122 Podcasts and subscribe to their channel wherever you're listening to this episode now. That is Anthony's podcast subsidiary of his film company. I have other financial crime cases I've been working on that will be produced as True Crime South Africa series in the near future. But this one is different, of course, because it's not my work, but it is most certainly absolutely fascinating and very important to listen to, which is why I'm sharing it in the True Crime South Africa feed. Right. With that explanation done, I'm going to hand you over to Anthony and let him tell you about what happens when your childhood friend turns out to be someone you don't actually know.
It was February 2020 when I first saw the Facebook group called Where is Robert John Johnson? And my stomach dropped. Could something horrible have happened to my childhood best friend? Could he have been hijacked, kidnapped, or been involved in a car accident somewhere? These stories are not uncommon in South Africa, and I thought the worst had possibly happened to my old friend. I'd grown up in Bloemfontein and became best friends with Robert John in preschool. We remained friends all the way through primary school as well as into our adult life. We had spent countless hours playing soccer, cricket, video games, and we hung out at each other's houses almost every weekend. Later, we would drink together before heading off to the iconic Barbas Cafe. He was a good guy. People liked him. So I really hoped that nothing bad had happened to him. I immediately joined the Facebook group and looked for any information, especially around his last known whereabouts. Maybe I could help. But strangely, there wasn't much information. The admin of the group had posted that Robert John had been missing for 2 weeks, and if anybody had any information concerning his whereabouts, they should come forward. So, I mean, I wanted to know who last saw him. What was he wearing? Was he in the right frame of mind? But instead, everyone was directed to a website called whereisrobertjohnjohnson.com. So, hungry for those details, I clicked through, and that's where I learned what had actually happened. Robert John had not been kidnapped or killed. He had in fact fled South Africa, allegedly with millions of rands belonging to close friends and family. You see, Robert John ran a business called JM Investments, which, according to the flashy portfolio booklet given to clients, said, "With our proven track record, we trust that you will find us to be valuable partners to take care of your finances, hopes, and dreams." But it turns out that their hopes and dreams were now shattered. Some of the people who invested with him invested their life savings. At first, they saw monthly statements detailing growth of their money. But the joy of seeing quick gains soon turned to worry when investors couldn't withdraw their money or reach Robert John. They had thought their money was safe in the hands of a lifetime friend, someone who had a good reputation and could be trusted. Millions were missing, and there was no sign of Robert John to answer the distressing calls and messages. What made his disappearance more shocking was that he had allegedly abandoned his wife, Maria, and his 5-month-old baby to go on the run. Did my friend turn into a thief and a deranged con man, willing to rip off his friends and family and abandon them? Or did he get himself too deep into high-risk investments, leading to debt and not being able to claw that money back? Nobody had any answers. The details of how Robert John operated were still very murky to me. I didn't really speak to him that much in the last 5 or 6 years as I'd moved to Cape Town. But the sudden realization that people's retirements, pensions, and savings were missing led me to speak with an investor into JM Investments who is still shocked about what transpired. As with most of the clients, this investor knew Robert John from when he was just a small boy and was convinced to invest with him based on his glowing reviews by friends and, of course, his reputation.
Ah, there we go.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. My gosh, you haven't changed.
Yeah, well, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know.
You've obviously got good genes. And I don't mean the ones you wear.
Yeah. Well,
this is Sharon. Hey? She is the mother of Tyron, who was best friends with my brother back in the day. And so all four of us spent a lot of time at each other's houses. Sharon looked after us and was affectionately known as Auntie Shawnee.
So what happened was, at the time when my dad died, I was left with 1.5 million rand, which I desperately wanted to invest. I phoned Robert John and I said to him, you know, how does his things work?
Yeah.
And then he said to me, listen, before you do anything, let me come round and bring my portfolio and you can have a look at it and see what you want to do and how much you want to invest. Anyway, it was a beautiful portfolio, fantastically set out, and I thought it very strange because he only had people that we knew. So I thought, well, you know, Robert John has been in our home since he was in kindergarten, you know, how wrong can you get, you know? Anyway, then I thought about it and lulled over it. And then this September, he contacted me. And I said to him, okay, I'm ready to do it. I gave him R1 million. And I, September, October, November, December, January and February. Up until the 12th of February, I'd heard nothing from him. And normally by the 12th of every month, he'd send a statement with your investment, the increase of your investment. Yeah, and I thought, no, that's fantastic. You know, I can start drawing some money to do things, you know, that I want to do. And never thought anything of it. And then the 12th came and there was no investment email that I got. So I kept phoning him and he didn't answer his phone. And then I phoned Maria, his wife, and she didn't answer her phone. And I thought, it's very strange. Then somebody had seen him. They picked it up on the cameras that he'd been to draw money or something. And he just disappeared. Nobody knew anything. The next minute, his lease on his Mercedes, his townhouse was up and Maria and her baby had moved out. And he was gone like a thief in the night. Anthony, I cried for days. And now there's nothing. I've got nothing. I'm still working at 68. Because of this. It's a lot of money. And my dad's hard-earned money. I mean, we were four children and we each got equally the same amount of money. And to think that this little guy comes in here and is stealing money from everybody. I mean, how does he sleep at night?
The inner workings of the JM investment was something that needed to be fleshed out. People didn't necessarily know how money was raised through their investment. But another investor that I spoke with, who prefers to be anonymous, spoke about what he believes happened and takes us into how the scheme may have worked behind the scenes. Their voice obviously has been altered to protect their identity, but it gives good insight into the mechanics behind things.
Like, I think Johnson's way of doing things was luring people on the back of returns that are too good to be true, and they were too good to be true anyway, right? So everyone's like, oh, it's working great, he's doing such a great job, he's building this great portfolio, everybody's investing with him. If everybody's doing it, surely we should too. So we were in for a while, and when I started becoming skeptical, it was always just a one line of what the return was for the month. So it was like opening balance, return, closing balance. And I was like, what did you invest in, man? Like, what's the line item of return that makes up the 4.67%, hypothetically? Yeah, I'll send it to you. It was never sent. To get to a 4 or 5% yield per month is just not possible. And I think in the beginning, you know, maybe he was doing a couple of good trades and doing quite well and he shorted quite a few things. So I think he was quite aggressive around his approach, shorted, did well, had some returns, etc. And then he started losing. And I think he was trying to buy time, right? So he's like, and then he'll use other people's money to pay out when there's a withdrawal that's being made. But then the collective deficit was so big that he couldn't claw it back. So I think there were multiple facets of clawing back the deficit. But ultimately, it just, you know, it was too big for him to fix. To be honest with you, we knew Johnson. He was never a guy that had negative intent, right? He was a guy that wanted to go out of his way to do harm to others, whether it be financially or physically. But I also think he got used to the lifestyle. You know, we can talk about the bad that went with Johnson's deeds and how he lured in more investors by using other people's money, getting a quick payout and making it seem like, well, I can actually stretch this amount of money very quickly, earn money very quickly, and then it starts drying up. I think he made an executive decision that was on the back of, I'm not going to be able to pull this back. So I think there was still money left. and he fed with whatever was left. But I don't think that was a vast amount of money. I think the losses were quite extreme.
So where is Robert John? It's been 6 years since that Facebook group began, and up until now, he has evaded arrest. Everyone has an idea of where he could be, but no one really knows.
Somebody was telling me that Robert John is gambling online, and he's using the name Ernie Balls.
Ernie Balls, like Ernie Els.
Ernie Els, but he's using Ernie Balls.
Okay.
Now, he told me that. I don't even know.
So he was a golfer. He liked golf, it sounds.
Who, Robert John?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did, very much. He often used to go and play golf.
Some thought he had moved to Holland. Others, Greece. Many thought he had moved to Scotland. And then there were those who thought he had been killed by angry investors. But that was until June 2026, last week, when a post on the Facebook group showed the front page of a local newspaper stating that he had actually been spotted in the north of Spain. He was allegedly working at a hotel. He was playing golf and using a pseudonym. A video surfaced online of a local golf club during Christmas in 2025. And in the video, Robert John can be seen receiving prizes, smiling broadly. And he wasn't looking like a man who had fled after losing his friend's money, as well as leaving his wife and child behind. He seemed happy. He was winning prizes, he was drinking and smoking, and he was surrounded by a group of unsuspecting people that had no idea that this man was potentially wanted back in South Africa. This spotting was shocking to a lot of people, including myself, and really brought home what this guy had actually done and the lack of accountability he seemed to have about losing people's pensions, savings, and investments, and basically abandoning everyone he knew. It's a real crushing blow to a lot of people. I didn't invest, thank goodness, but obviously there are a lot of people that did, and I think that's what really hurts about this case. Yes, he took money from his friends, who were his age. But then he also went to pensioners, to old parents. Even his mother invested in him. Everyone was affected by this. People that couldn't necessarily go back into the workforce and make up all the money that they lost. But also, it was his own family that was destroyed from within. A year after his disappearance in 2021, his mom Lynette died in Scotland. And a few months later, his father died too, leaving only his sister, Kathleen, behind. An investor who lost around 600,000 rand in Robert John's business was close friends with his parents, and she spoke to me about the effect this had on them and Robert John's family as a whole.
We weren't approached to invest with him. So it wasn't his fault that we got involved.
Mm.
But his dad, Mac, we were very good, close friends with the mom and dad. And I knew that Lynette, the mom, was investing with Robert John. We started investing. There were various policies that that matured. And instead of investing them wisely, we invested them with Robert John. It was 660,000 rand. That was our retirement money. We got a message from a friend of ours saying, "Ha ha, where is your friend Robert John?" But it was a case of, you know, we've been saying so much good about our friend, and now here is, "Where is your fancy friend Robert John?" And then we went and we looked on Facebook and saw. But he let his mom retire, so she had no income. The day that after this happened, Lynette and I happened to pull up at the petrol station at the same time. I mean, she could only afford 30 rand that she had in her bag. She had nothing else. The mom and dad died of broken hearts. Then they went over to visit Kathleen, and both of them died. And actually, this news of his, of Robert John's, you know, that they found him, came out on the day, the anniversary of Lynette's death.
Oh my God.
It was really hard for Kathleen. I've not spoken to her, but we've sent messages backwards and forwards. But you know, that's all. I haven't spoken to her.
there is another player in this case that a lot of people have spoken about that I felt needed to be raised in this episode. Her name is Maria. She was the wife of Robert John and also the mother of his child. She filed for divorce after he vanished in 2020. Some people I have spoken to query how involved she was in the business, saying she assisted him in convincing people that everything was safe and sound, whereas some people believe she was fully part of his scheme, and others think that she had no idea what he was up to, and his lies kept her out of the loop. Well, I've spoken with Maria. She has not been prepared to leave a voice note or record a call with me, but she has spoken to me candidly in length about what she says happened to her and what she saw. So I contacted Maria, and this is what she sent back. I think what makes this story even more shocking is the events that started from about a year or so before he disappeared, she said. Unfortunately, because it was my living nightmare. He had spun a pretty convincing story of why investors couldn't get their money out. He was relating to SARS putting a hold on his account, and we all believed him. But the extent of the actions he took to make his lie believable was pretty shocking. Like he faked meetings with the Reserve Bank and auditors, where he flew to Joburg and back, and some other stuff. In 2019, I was pregnant and I didn't really want to know anything. But in December, investors started contacting me directly and I started investigating him. She continues, I eventually confronted him in the end. He came clean once I finally did something I should have done a long time ago. I was furious. I was planning on divorcing him before that. I had even moved into my mom's place. It wasn't about the money, but it was about the lies he told me for at least a year, if not more. I was like, but what about that meeting you said you had in Joburg? And he said, I went to Oliver Tambo, hung around there for a couple of hours, and then I flew back. This was about 2 days before he disappeared. He didn't mention anything about bailing. The plan was for him to turn himself in. We were going to meet a lawyer on the Monday to discuss how to proceed. He seemed more like in denial of the gravity of the situation. In terms of justice for the investors, she says, yes, I think what would be fair is that some people want their money, and I truly feel sorry for them. If I ever win the Euro lottery, I would pay them all back. Maria now lives in Holland with her 6-year-old child. So to end this episode, I thought I would read out some of the JM Investments portfolio booklet that was given to Sharon when she was contemplating investing with Robert John. And I think it's really important to take cognizance of these words that was used, and it was all built around trust. So the first one, a great business considers the client's best interest at all times, from initial investment stage throughout the whole journey. Your life goals are the backbone of any good financial plan. You deserve complete disclosure, how we work, what we earn. This is in sharp contrast to what I was told by Anonymous, who said when he requested to see where the money was made, he was told, oh, don't worry, I'll send it to you soon, but it never arrived. Then there is a double page dedicated to success stories, in inverted commas. Only first names are given on the pages of these success stories, and I won't mention them here. One statement reads, I have recommended JM Investments to many family members and friends, and I will continue to do so as I believe in who they are and what they do. This just shows how much people believed in Robert John and went out to bat for him. And then ending the portfolio document is an aerial photograph of the Shard in London and a very cryptic paragraph. It goes like this. We at JM Investment Fund want you to change your vision and not only focus on tomorrow. We want you to widen your perspective and understand that a forest is made up of the sum of its trees. So what's next? I would like you to tell me what you would like me to go into. What would you be most interested in hearing? Would you like to hear more from the victims? Would you like to know more about Robert John's history, learn if there were any red flags? Would you like more information from the legal side of things? This is very much an open project that I'm doing just as a labor of love, and it already feels like a little bit of a community. So please reach out with any ideas, comments, or suggestions, and I'll take them on board. I do now live in the UK, and a flight to the north of Spain is about 2,500 rand, so I'm thinking of going to meet with some of the golfers he played with to find out what they thought of the man we all knew so well, or at least thought we did. Perhaps there are clues to his actions. Perhaps there are more lies. Perhaps I will run into him at the 19th hole and meet Ernie Balls. You never know. All I know is that this story is far from over.